Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Shane McMahon is the best wrestler in the world.
Whole wide world.
I'm Ollie Davis. This is Lou Cohen. Well, at least I think those are right. I don't know what's right anymore. Welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Crown Jewel Review Edition, which, if there was any way to get us to stop thinking and talking about all those controversial, nasty things going on with WWE and Saudi Arabia, like the women's rights, like Sami Zayn not being allowed, like the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, the Washington Post journalist, putting on one of the most bonkers pay-per-views of all time, well, I would say of all time, since this year's WrestleMania, is a hell of a way to do it. We're going to kick off with just one of the many ridiculous things that happened on this show, and that is that Shane McMahon won the final of a tournament he was not in and did not compete in for the majority of the night.
He only came back 2 weeks ago. He was...
Okay, so let's lay the cards on the table here.
Yeah.
We've gone through the stages of grief and rage already. We've done the rage.
I never hit rage because I was never mad about this. I thought this was far too funny to be angry about. I mean, let's be honest. All right, let's be honest. Putting cards out on the table, this tournament doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah.
Like, it was never like whoever won this tournament was going to get a massive push out of it. It's not like whoever won this tournament was going to get a future title opportunity. The whole tournament didn't matter. It was there to fill time on a pay-per-view that was really only there for the main event. So, really, none of it mattered. So, for me, this was freaking hilarious. This was so funny.
Yes, in a very sad jokes on us kind of way.
Absolutely. Like, WWE trolled us hard.
Yes.
This whole decision was done because of people like you and I. Because of the people like Cultaholic. Because of the people who sit there and go like, God, Shane McMahon's the worst. He's just awful. No, and then they went there and was like, no, he's the best in the world.
No, do you see what I think? That's a fun way of looking at it. I think there also might be an element of, this is a good idea.
Well, in fairness, it did get a pop from the crowd. The crowd were quiet for quite a lot of this show. But when Shane McMahon got in the ring, there was a chance of this is awesome. He did get a massive pop when his music hit. The crowd did react to him winning the match. So, in some respects, it did work. Right? Like, yeah. It worked some way.
So, should we break down? The other part is, how has this been built? Quite ridiculously so, by not just saying it's the World Cup. It is the World Cup to determine the best in the world.
Yes.
That is kind of its actual name, because they say that tagline, along with saying the phrase World Cup, every time they promote this match. So it is ingrained into you. Okay, and I'm not saying that okay.
When the graphic came up with Shane McMahon holding the cup and it says, Shane McMahon, World Cup winner, best in the world.
Yeah.
I was roaring with laughter.
We were all laughing a lot. It's like our friend who's a bit of a dick, but for some reason we hang out with them all the time, has run in, kicked us all in the balls, and we've kind of found it funny.
Oh, I tell you what this reminds me of. This reminds me of when you're playing like a wrestling game with your mates, and your one mate, who you all think is a bit of a knob anyway, picks purposely the worst person, and you've all picked the best guys. You picked all the guys with the best stats. And you're all laughing and go like, what an idiot, you picked the worst guy there. And then he button mashes his whole way through it and wins. And you go like, I can't believe we all lost to him.
Yeah.
That is what this is like.
And while that was happening, he was naked and urinating on himself. That's a more fitting analogy. So this was, let's just remind ourselves. Shane McMahon was not in this tournament.
No, he was not. So what happened was, and bonkers outside of that, the finals of the Best in the World tournament was Miz and Dolph Ziggler. Like, come on. This tournament had Seth Rollins, Rey Mysterio, Randy Orton, Kurt Angle, Bobby Splashley.
And it not came John.
Not John. And it came down to Dolph and Miz. Come on. So anyway, that was the final. And like, Shane came down to the ring because he was there to, you know, represent SmackDown and be like, I want my guy to win. And then before the match got started, the referee was trying to send Drew to the back. And then Miz and Dolph got into a bit of a scuffle. Miz fell to the outside and he looked like he hurt his knee. So much so, so good was Miz in this segment. I thought it was real. I even said to you, I was like, oh my God, he's hurt.
Yeah, and I said, you're a mark.
Yeah, and then you were like, you idiot. It's clearly an angle. And I was like, and then after I was like, yeah, when they started like filming them up close and him going like, I am okay.
Yeah. And I was like, I've never been injured. Yeah. Oh, this literally never happens.
Yeah. So then I was like, okay, so it is an angle.
Yeah.
And then you said,
Miz did a good sell job.
Miz did a great sell.
It was just quite obviously a work, but it was good.
And then essentially what happened was just 5 minutes of like slow realization that Shane was going into the match.
But we all,
as we all said, I think Shane's going to put himself into the match. And they were like, that's not what they're going to do. He's not going to put himself in the match. That would be really weird. And then it was like a ticking time bomb. The second
it was like,
part,
they're not going to do it. They're not going to do it. It looks like they're going to do it.
Or they might do it. Or they are doing it. Oh, they have done it. Oh, he's won.
It was because like Shane McMahon's arguing with the referees, like talking to Greg Hamilton, the ring announcer, saying, we're going to like, Miz is going to have to forfeit this match. It's going to go to Dolph. And Baron Corbin's there, Raw general manager, going, ha, 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 ha. The Raw general manager and the SmackDown commissioner, because the other authority figures are women. So, and like, there are so many things to unpack here. The host was Hulk Hogan. That's one of the other things that happened. Why isn't he out here? This is the only host-like job he had, really.
Yep.
But he's just opening the show. Nothing else.
He literally came. He flew all the way to Saudi Arabia to say hello.
I'll be there for you, brother.
And then left. There was like, can you need to say dude, brother, Jack at least 3 times each, then you can go.
It's just too ridiculous. So Shane McMahon is talking like he's there going, no, don't call off the match. No, Miz can, like, I can't have the SmackDown guy lose the World Cup to determine the best in the world. And we're just, me, you and Andy Datson are like, no. And then, like, Shane, it was such a goofball sell job of, wait a second, I'm going to have to volunteer myself.
Yeah. Matt LeBlanc himself got into the ring and they announced Shane McMahon has taken his place. The very first thing that Shane McMahon did in this match is punch Dolph right in the face. Like,
ding, 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 boof, right in the stiff. Face.
Like, not a worked punch. He literally punched Dolph right in the face because Shane gets too excited. We all remember.
I'm going to win the best in the world.
I think to Shane, this is real. Like, he's like, I finally get the clarification I've always deserved that I am the best wrestler in the world. I went toe-to-toe with AJ Styles at WrestleMania last year.
I do MMA.
Mama.
Yeah, this is... and it's... So, let's... His show is based around...
The land of
opportunity.
Yep. Because we were like, well, at one point we said, maybe he's going to bring back someone else. Maybe it'll be a surprise entrant into the Best in the World tournament. And then, no, it was Shane.
Get a pop for Rey Mysterio.
Yeah, or a complete surprise. Like someone from the SmackDown side, an R-Truth or something like that. And he can come out and just have...
R-Truth versus The Miz. That's actually something that's been built up on TV. Oh, yeah.
Because this was the other night of the year where Raw and SmackDown stars go head-to-head in direct competition.
So you've got the whole Shane thing, which is just ridiculous and funny and laughable. In, like, you know, a fun way for us. But actually, like, if you're watching this as someone who isn't obsessively into the goofy side of wrestling as us, they're going to turn off, I think. Or they're either going to stay with it and go, that was fun, like the Saudi Arabian fans who were loving it. Or they're just going to go, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, this doesn't take itself seriously at all. So the other, like, beyond all that, psychologically, having a heel versus heel final, Dolph Ziggler and The Miz, and running an injury angle with The Miz for Shane McMahon to valiantly step in, that, like, psychologically, that's skew-iff. It should be a babyface. Imagine if that's Rey Mysterio, a history of knee problems.
Exactly.
He's like, oh, my knee. And Shane's like, I'm going to fight this for you, Rey. And you're like, yeah, Shane is doing this for Rey. But now you've got, oh, Shane's just kind of doing it for himself.
Yeah, so it's like Shane. It was what Kevin Owens has been saying all along. Shane McMahon is an egomaniac. He's made the whole show about him. And remember, that was the whole thing. Shane was the babyface in that storyline. And yet here we are, months down the line. Shane's been gone for ages. The first thing he did when he came back is insert himself into a tournament he had no business being a part of and has become the best in the world.
Yeah.
He can now officially say in WWE canon, he is the best wrestler in the world. This is hilarious. It's so weird. What a weird night.
It's very strange.
What a weird
evening.
But
again, it's the perfect PR play. We're not talking about the murder.
No.
We're not talking about the women.
We haven't even talked about Brock Lesnar yet.
Yes. that like, real life concerns are now buried so deep in this wrestling nonsense.
They are geniuses. This company is stock full of geniuses.
We've been worked.
We've all been absolutely worked.
Like you said, the bell rings. Shane hilariously just punches Dolph right in the face for real.
Potato farm
a
all the way.
A few more in the corner. They look like
potato and leek
horrible.
Soup all over the show.
And then Dolph bounces off the ropes, comes back. Shane hits this massive elbow into his face. And we're just like, we're wincing and laughing at every move. We were saying, it's a shame the live stream didn't work today. That was our plan. And we were like, God, this is a boring pay-per-view. Probably good we didn't live stream it. And then this match happened. We had so much fun. Michael Cole is screaming on commentary like, how is this right? How is this being allowed to happen?
You said, has Michael Cole gone heel? I was like, no, he's just got brand loyalty because he's an idiot.
He's a Raw guy. Baron Corbin is, you know, kind of egging up the SmackDown side of things. But like, I'm for once...
Corey Graves.
What a nice Baron Corbin. For once, I'm there agreeing with Cole. Like, how is this? Why isn't anyone putting a stop to this? Isn't there anyone more senior there?
That photo of Shane McMahon backstage holding the cup. Okay. Bearing in mind, his match was like maybe 2 minutes long. Pouring with sweat is Shane McMahon. Pouring with sweat.
Well, let's talk about the match, you know, stiffs everywhere. And then Shane hits this coast to coast. But again. Dolph has wrestled 3 matches now.
He's the heel.
Shane McMahon has just walked in like, don't worry, I got this, guys.
Fresh as a daisy, Shane McMahon.
And he hits this coast to coast, which, you know, I actually always pop for. It's a cool move. And he wins. And I've just written here, re-sign, they said. You'd be in the World Cup finals, they said, for Dolph. Little did he know. But then, and I went back and I timed this on the network. Shane McMahon then celebrates, well, like he'd just won the World Cup. For 3 minutes and 15 seconds, he celebrates in the ring. He goes around and high-fives everyone outside the ring. Then he is given the trophy, and he celebrates again inside. Pyro celebrates outside again, celebrates up the ramp. Does lots more celebrating. You can hear him as well going, yeah, SmackDown's the best. And it's so unconvincing. It's so goofy. 3 minutes, 15 seconds. Do you know how long Brock Lesnar versus Braun Strowman went?
Oh, no, I didn't even think about that. How long did it go?
3 minutes 20.
This show was incredible at the end of the day. Oh, for all the wrong reasons, like. But,
sorry. Shane is Crown Jewel's Nicholas.
Is this...
This is WrestleMania 34's Nicholas
Angle. Is this a storyline? Is this going to build to a storyline? Or is this just going to be forgotten about come Tuesday?
I don't know where they go from here. Like, because Survivor Series, there is a Raw versus SmackDown element to this. There's the whole Baron Corbin thing. So, how does Shane play into this?
Baron wants the World Cup back. And that's what the Survivor Series thing is actually for. Or, I can actually almost see this being quite a good bit of character for Shane McMahon. Imagine if he's always walking around backstage with the World Cup. And, like, just standing there, even when he's doing his GM stuff, like, coming out with the World Cup, just setting it down beside himself, and then going, "What up, Delaware," or whatever it is. And then as he leaves, just picked up the World Cup again, holds it above his head, and then leaves. What a wonderful character thing that would be for Shane as a heel. Yeah. It does not work as a babyface, but as a heel, that's funny.
It's perfect, yeah. Well, that's the problem. Like, when he's running around for these 3 minutes 15 seconds, it's to such an over-egged extent that it's B-team. It's like a B-team celebration.
But they're babyfaces.
Yeah, they're babyface, but it's an obnoxious heel celebration is what Shane McMahon did.
Yeah.
And I just, like, either we all wake up from this weird dream where Hulk Hogan was there and Brock's champion again and Shane McMahon is the best wrestler in the world and that particular part isn't canon and we just move on. But I agree. I think you now turn Shane heel.
Yeah,
but that does mean more heel authority figures.
But we've got Paige as the babyface.
I know,
GM.
But then you get that horrible dynamic as the McMahon slowly swamps whoever's beneath them.
Yeah, that's true.
So even scarier at the end of that was there was an hour, 4 minutes left for the final match of Taker, Kane, and Shawn and Triple H.
The Discord chat was everyone's going like, there's an hour left of this show. Dan, the mayor of Painesville, was terrified that they were all going to, the whole match was going to go an hour.
Yeah.
And thankfully, the show ran short, but...
Well, and we'll come on to possibly why shortly. Breaking.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
So before we get onto the pre-show, I'm just going to say my note here that Luke just saw. I forgot to say. This pay-per-view is my drunken uncle at Christmas, has a bit too much to drink, says some offensive things he shouldn't, but ultimately is quite funny. Right, so the pre-show had Shinsuke Nakamura versus Rusev.
This feels like a long time ago.
Oh, God, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And this was a match added late, so we never did the predictions for it.
No, we didn't.
But if we did,
we'd have said Shinsuke
Nakamura.
We would have
both said Shinsuke Nakamura, who won and retained his United States title.
In quite a creative way. Rusev locked in the accolade. And actually, like, Rusev had a couple of, like, he had a really good near fall off a match kick.
Yeah.
Nakamura had a really great late kick out. And then he locks in the accolade. You and Datsun both went, like, he's winning.
Because
he's like proper cinched in.
There are different versions of the accolade. Yeah. There's the accolade that I'm not fully going to lock in because I know they're getting out of it and I don't want to make the move. Like, Rusev's smart.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to make this look like super accolade because I want to protect super accolade.
Yeah.
But this looked like super accolade. And we're like, he's in the middle of the ring. Really, it was just some very good camera work.
Yes.
Because the camera then just goes back and Nakamura reaches for the ropes. And, I didn't see the rope just above the camera.
Yeah.
But that was a good near spot. But then Nakamura scurries back, and in scurrying back, sits up. His head hits him right in the Bulgarian brutes there.
Yeah, and he sells it. So it's an accidental low blow, but accidentally on purpose. Kind of, I thought it was a very creative finish for Nakamura, like carrying on that, his, you know, phenomenal ball arm that he was doing throughout the earlier part of this year. And he retained the title. Andy Datsun pointed out that Nakamura is now doing standing Kinshasas, which you correctly put out, because it's less effort.
Yeah. Why would you want to put the effort in? But yet, that, like, Nakamura had this beautiful look on his face just as he's about to hit the Kinshasa. He just, you know, like, the referee's like, what's going on here? Was there anything untoward?
Yeah.
And Nakamura's like, no. Referee turns his back. Yeah, there was.
Why isn't he on TV any? Like, why isn't he on TV?
And you know what? You know what's even worse is that now it's Survivor Series. Nakamura hasn't had a storyline even before winning the United States belt, because really that storyline was Jeff and Randy.
Yes, true, yeah.
And now he hasn't got another storyline because it's 2 weeks of an inter-brand match with the IC champion at Survivor Series.
Though, Seth versus Nakamura is a match does sound quite good on.
Totally, paper. Totally. God, so I guess Nakamura's always been on SmackDown, so this is a first time ever.
In WWE,
WWE. I don't know if they fought
might have done elsewhere.
But this was the first time we saw what the broadcast would look like. And Renee Young, you know, she was a lady person on a show where ladies weren't allowed, not even interviewers and stuff like that. And she was pretty covered up. She had the turtleneck on.
Yep, had her hands covered and
even
things like
that. One of those tops where you get a little glove in with the top.
Yeah, but she was there.
She was
there. We theorized that they said she was going to be part of the announce team, but the announce team might not have actually gone, and they would have just done things as VO. Wouldn't be the first time WWE have done that in the past. So it was actually surprising that she was there. A nice surprise that she was there.
Yeah, I mean, it's good that she was there. Still, I thought she added very little on commentary.
I like the bickering between her and Corey. Yeah. I much prefer the bickering between her and Corey than I do Corey and Byron, because Corey and Byron seems malicious.
Yeah, but
that is tantamount to bullying, whereas, like, they have quite good banter back and forth.
It would be okay if Byron was occasionally good enough to get one up on Corey.
Yeah.
But it isn't. It's just...
Because Byron's character is to go, yeah, pancakes! Yeah. And that is essentially all he's there to do on SmackDown.
Also, in the crowd, I noticed it didn't look full.
No.
There were lots of areas in the back, sort of...
But is that just because... Is that just because they, like... And it's weird. We noticed this at the Great Royal Rumble as well. People don't stay in their seats. It's a lot of milling around. It's a lot of moving around. It's a lot of, like, oh, I need to go and talk to this person because I've got some business deals to do with them or what have you. So, like, it never feels like anyone's really watching the show.
Oh, they're drinking oil. More oil, please.
Yeah, handing over plutonium business cards. So it doesn't really feel like a lot of people are actually there for the show. Like, they've just taken their kids there, and it's like, well, you go off and enjoy the thing now. I've got to go and speak to this person over here.
Yeah.
Like a business function.
Yeah.
That happens to have wrestling.
Which is crazy, because those seats look really comfortable.
Oh!
Again, they were like the sofa set.
So comfy!
Why would you leave those?
Well, we said, like...
I'd snuggle down.
I'm always terrified to go to a WrestleMania show, because it's, like, you know, 12 hours long, and you've got to sit in those seats for 12 hours.
Yeah.
If I'm going to sit on a long WWE show, I want it to be comfy.
Uh-huh. Mm. But then after that, we got, you know, a bit more pre-show green screen stuff. And then we got Hulk Hogan's return in the arena itself. He comes out and he just, like, says, Hulkamania is stronger than ever right here in Saudi Arabia. Here at Crown Jewel.
Yeah, he never said in Saudi Arabia or mentioned the building, I'm presuming because he didn't know where either what the country was or what the building was called. So he's just like, just kept looking up to the screen and seeing Crown Jewel and be like, I know that word, brother. I'll just say that.
The Silver Dome. Just like someone's always on the back of his shoulder going, it's the Silver Dome. We like to make fun of Hogan as this bumbling old fool, but the fact of the matter is he is also very politically astute and he'll know about the Saudi Arabia stuff. He will know that he got some heat about saying, can't wait to go to Saudi Arabia just like 2 weeks ago. So he probably thought, I'm going to spin this the Hogan way. And, you know, I'm not offended by him being back. I can see why people are. I can see why people aren't. I just don't care.
Yeah,
don't care about him being back.
Well, that's
it's
it.
Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, I mean, like, if I was in charge of the company, I probably wouldn't have brought him back because it brings nothing but bad PR with
yeah,
him.
Yeah, it's a bad business decision.
It's a bad business decision. But for me, as a fan, like, I'd stopped caring about Hulk Hogan many, many years ago. He was one of the reasons why I stopped watching after the Attitude Era ended. Like, when he came back and he won the championship in 2002, I was like, yeah, I think I'm done with wrestling now.
Yeah.
And that was one of the reasons I stopped. So, that and Raven leaving. So, I don't really care about Hogan.
Yeah, he's... And it's not like he's as a character that's evolved.
he is still the opposite of Chris Jericho.
Yeah, red and yellow Hogan.
Yeah.
Hulkamaniacs. He said brother too many times even for a Hulk Hogan promo, I thought.
And before anyone says, oh, but the NWO, that's where he changed. He didn't. He still was Hulk Hogan, just in different colours.
Mm.
Like, he was the exact same character, brother, 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 dude, Jack, just in black.
But he did bad things.
But he was still
but,
Hulk
but, like, Hogan. Delivery and promo went, yeah, that wasn't the idea. He was meant to be not a wrestling character anymore.
Yes.
But he got a ton load of pyro.
Yeah, did he get the pyro or did the show get pyro?
Ooh, interesting. What an existential question.
Because when he came out, quite a lot of pyro. And we were like, blimey, that's a lot of pyro.
Yeah.
That's a pay-per-view amount of pyro. Then when he left, like, the world almost exploded with the amount of pyro that went off. It was insanity.
Yeah, it was... The world nearly went off its axis there. And then it was Mohammed bin Salam they showed in the crowd, was it?
It was indeed, yeah. Probably one of the biggest pops of the night.
Yeah, so that is the Crown Prince. And he...
Who ordered the murder.
He just goes like that. That's like no flexing, no Hulk Hogan poses. I was disappointed. Then Renee was asked, are you excited? And she goes...
Oh, I thought you were talking to me then.
No, yeah, and she goes, I'm freaking out. I was like, I bet you are. but then we got Rey Mysterio versus Randy Orton. So this was the first match of the World Cup. So all the way back in the quarterfinals?
Yes, big quarterfinals.
On the SmackDown side of things. And I as boring as a lot of these were, I love one-night tournaments.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. And I would say this was the second best match of the tournament.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah,
this was... Ray's so good at being a babyface, and I thought Orton was just lapping up the heat. Because Saudi Arabian crowds aren't as used to seeing wrestling as much as we are live, they are easily worked. We saw this in the Greatest Royal Rumble pay-per-view when John Cena and Triple H did very little in the ring, but people were going crazy like audiences used to back in the 90s because all this stuff was still relatively exciting.
Yeah.
But when you've seen Canadian Destroyers on the apron as a setup move...
In the opener.
A shoulder tackle isn't that hot.
Yeah.
But here, like, you know, Randy Orton was just doing all his usual Randy Orton stuff, but was getting nuclear heat. And Orton can pace a match really well around that. And he hit this beautifully timed dropkick on Ray coming off the top rope.
Totally.
But you're right, this was good. And Ray won with a roll-up.
Yes, and then Randy beat him up after the match. And that was when I thought, cool, so Ray's definitely going through to the final then. Mm. And they'll tell the underdog story of the injured Ray always battling the odds, trying to get to the final. Because I had Ray pegged. Well, I mean, I thought Randy was winning. Clearly, I'm terrible at picking winners. But I thought, like, at that point, I was like, well, surely Ray has to win then. You tell the underdog story.
Yeah.
So it seemed, in hindsight, this beatdown seems even weirder. Unless they're setting up a Ray-Randy feud.
Yeah, which is what we've been speculating on for a while.
Yeah.
But you're right. The whole Miz or my ankle thing does come out of nowhere because that was not set up.
No.
But if that was Ray,
yeah,
who had been beaten up here, and then, you know, you can beat him up, Miz can go after him in the second match, and he finally succumbs right out the gate here, maybe after an attack by Drew.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense.
Also, speaking of the Miz thing, why didn't they play up on his larynx injury? Rather than sell the ankle, why didn't you do that instead?
Because that was something that happened genuinely, and they were like, plans. No, let's just carry on with the plans.
Tunnel vision.
But yes, this was quite enjoyable. But it also could be because it was only the second match,
yes,
and I hadn't got sick of the set. Honestly, so many of these matches before it went booking crazy was
so boring.
Heel works over babyface.
Yeah.
This babyface makes comeback.
Because here's the thing now. We're going to talk about the next three matches. There is so little to say about them. So little to say because they are remarkably boring.
Yeah. Next up, we got Miz versus Jeff Hardy, which might have been the worst match. This was very boring. I didn't think they gelled well together at all.
I just got nothing to say about it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, not a lot happened. They had a match and Miz won.
Which was was it kind of surprising? I'm looking at my notes here. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
So much pyro for Miz I've got.
I thought
Jeff did Matt's delete headbuckle bash.
Jeff felt that he was at half speed
in
the match. Like, it wasn't Jeff at full Jeff.
I said to you when we were watching it, like, Jeff used to wrestle with so much air.
Yeah.
Like, that was the whole point of him. He'd get so much height on things. But now it feels like his pockets are full of stones. When he falls on the floor, he falls like a bag of stones.
Yeah.
As opposed to these, like, more chaotic things. It's not... I don't aesthetically like the way Jeff Hardy wrestles at the moment.
Do you remember, like, Jeff in the dark days of TNA or the dark days of Jeff Hardy in TNA? And, like, he was just wrestling matches and I was like, God, this is just a bit sad to watch. Jeff still feels like that now, only he doesn't have the drugs anymore.
Yeah.
It just still feels a bit
sad. So it's just, it's just like, oh, he's old.
It's just old. Yeah, it's just old. It's a bit sad.
It's a different kind of sad.
Yeah.
There was a fan in the crowd wearing a Bullet Club t-shirt.
They get everywhere then.
Yeah.
Smarks.
It just ended up with Miz reversing a twist of fate into the skull crushing finale for the victory.
It was a match.
Mm. Then we got the Raw side of the quarterfinals. Seth Rollins took on Not John Lashley. Greg Hamilton announced everyone for the World Cup matches with their full list of accomplishments. So, like Jeff was this.
Randy Orton was multi-time world champion, blah, 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 blah. Intercontinental champion, yada, yada, yada.
And it comes to Bobby Lashley, and he says, former ECW champion. And we all cackled. but that was, most likely to just explain to everyone in the audience, this is why this is a big deal.
This is why these are the best in the world.
You know what?
When Shane McMahon came down, he's a former European champion. He's a former hardcore champion.
He went toe-to-toe with AJ Styles.
He went toe-to-toe with Kurt Angle in 2001.
All of this building up just makes Shane McMahon such a big teabag in my face. And I've just sat there and licked. And this match this might be the worst match because it was just so boring.
Yeah, I was going to say.
The crowd were not into this
at
all because I think they were like, okay, we're going to tune out for a bit. And Seth, I thought Seth injured his neck on the dive outside.
You said during this match, this is why WWE needs John Cena. Because a John Cena can come out and whip a crowd up into a frenzy. No matter where John Cena goes, he can get reactions out of people. Even if a crowd is completely dead, John Cena knows how to work a crowd and how to manipulate them. And that this tournament really was almost missing that presence.
Mm. Yeah, totally.
And, but, you know, Seth won with a stomp. It was very short, but reportedly Lashley is injured, which might explain the shortness of the match.
Yeah, like he was meant to be ridden off of Raw 2 Mondays ago.
Mm.
But then they, Cena said, I'm not doing Crown Jewel, so they had to kind of give him a win this week. It'd be interesting to see where
he
Lashley...
He lost this week.
Oh, yeah, by DQ. It'll be interesting to see where he goes from here, because this, we might not see Lashley for a while if he's going to recover from this reported separated shoulder. And finally, to see out the Raw semis, no quarters, we had Dolph Ziggler versus Kurt Angle.
Which Dolph won.
Yeah, this was surprising.
We said on the prediction show, God, Dolph's only here to take a pinfall. He got through to the bloody final, he nearly won the thing.
It's, Yeah, even Miz didn't get through to the final.
No.
Like, what a waste of Kurt Angle.
Right. Right? Like, what was the... All the stuff he had, like the Conquistador stuff, the stuff he was doing with Baron, absolutely none of that played into anything in this tournament. That was all for naught.
Yeah.
And he just got knocked out. I think Drew got in there. He might have, like, cost Kurt the match. But
So long ago.
But, like... Man, I was genuinely really surprised. I thought they were going to do Kurt Seth in the semifinals.
Oh, yeah. Well, so I thought that. But at the same time, I appreciate them holding off on that match.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's that as well. Mm-hmm. Like, I would hate the Kurt Seth match to be just this semifinal thing.
In a non-factor tournament.
In this thing. So I'm kind of glad in a way. But at the same time, what a stupid decision to have Kurt...
He was there
place.
To be a name, I guess.
Yeah.
Real shame.
He's an Olympic gold medalist, Crown Prince.
Yeah, and a former World Heavyweight Champion, a former WWE. Like, they didn't mention he was a former WCW champion. They mentioned Lashley was a former ECW champion. He's a two-time WCW champion.
Kurt.
Yeah, he won it during the Invasion.
Oh, right.
Twice, no less. Because they were just... There's a point. During the Invasion, the Attitude Era podcast brought this up recently. Mick Foley cut a promo leading up to the Survivor Series before the Invasion was over, saying, like, if you don't have a championship at the moment, there's something wrong with your career, because everyone was just winning belts. He's like, we're living in a world where Test is a double champion.
Not much to say about this match other than Dolph likes sleeper holds.
Yep. Ask him.
And that Kurt did some good Germans, angle slam kick out. After that, which I mean, Kurt goes, son of a bitch, and takes his straps off just off mic, and he gets Dolph in this ankle lock in for ages, and we were just like, well, this is the finish. Nope, Dolph manages a zigzag out of that.
Yeah.
It doesn't exactly make Kurt look great. At this point, I'm like, I need to restock on tissues because I got a bit of a cold at the moment. I walk out for a bit, I walk back in, and then the New Day are on a flying carpet.
And they
what?
Came on, like, they came out and then just like rose, and this flying carpet started going down to the ring, and I was like, God, this is moving slowly. It is going to take a while. Like, I've never heard so much of their entrance music.
Yeah.
It just kept going.
It went on for a while, and so New Day came out quite... That was pretty spectacular.
Yeah, it was good, yeah.
But in this pay-per-view, a minor footnote of ridiculousness.
Yep, they wanted to see a whole progressive world.
Then we got Big E and... not Big E, what am I talking about? We got The Bar with Big Show, which I guess is just The Bar now. Still not clear on that. And I thought that this is the first match with everyone in the ring at least, being fit, current gen guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they still had a bit of a pedestrian match. Like, there was nothing to separate this from an episode of SmackDown.
Really wasn't. It was there. Like, that's more or less you can say about it. It was there.
Really good near fall at
Kofi's
the end.
Kofi's great. Yeah, that was my only note from this match, really. Mm. Kofi's very good.
Yeah, there was a really good near fall where Kofi double stomps Sheamus off of Big E's shoulders, but Cesaro just in time. His timing's excellent for stuff like that. Breaks up the pin. And the finish was Big E's whipped into the corner, into the ref, but the ref was like, Cal was like, no. But Big Show knocks out Big E behind the referee's back, and bro kick for the win. No, nowhere near the level of match these guys can have.
This is New Day in The Bar. Like, these guys could have an absolute barn burner. But it was, at this point in time, it was a match.
Yeah, this feud
Hell
so
show.
Far. Yeah. this feud so far has not been New Day Usos.
No,
in the slightest. It should be. Like, there's no reason it can't.
But in fairness, though, nothing in the SmackDown tag team division has been New Day Usos from last year.
Which, like, is crazy, because everyone's so talented in that division.
They've got an amazing set of tag teams on SmackDown, but, like, clearly Vince just isn't into tag teams at the moment. You can tell that on bloody Raw, because their tag team champions are feuding.
Yeah, but they might be making a new group. I don't know. We'll see what happens there. Then we got the semis of the World Cup to determine the best in the world. The first was Miz versus Rey Mysterio. Miz cuts a backstage promo with Byron Saxton before this.
Yeah, I missed this because I went to go make a cup of tea.
So he was really, really hoarse. His voice was like this when he was cutting the promo.
Like a Kane promo.
Yes. And he blames it. Like, he said, I'm going to come out and I'm going to win, even though Jeff Hardy just mule kicked me in the throat. And he said, so that's the reason he was so hoarse. And it seemed genuine.
Yeah.
And
I can believe it.
Yeah. And you're like, that sounds pretty Jeff Hardy wrestling.
Yeah, it really does. Because Jeff's like, my feet are going here. If your throat's in the way, that's your fault.
So I actually quite like Miz and Rey together. Yeah, I enjoyed their match on was it SmackDown 1000? It was like the Miz TV segment.
Yes, it was.
Was that SmackDown 1000 or the week
after?
Well,
that was a week after.
It was a recent episode of SmackDown. I think, like, for Miz's style of wrestling...
Yes, it was, because Rey Nakamura was SmackDown 1000.
Of course, yeah. So Miz's style of wrestling, I think Rey is a very good opponent for.
Yeah.
It just, Miz matches in-ring aren't spectacular, although he did have some very, very good ones over the last year period. But, like, Rey is really good to fit into the Miz template.
Well, I think Rey is a really, really good versatile wrestler. Like, you can put him in, like, that main event of All In, where you just have to go around and do your big flip-de-doos and whatnot. And he's great in that role. But against someone like Miz, he can have almost, like, a perfect WWE match. And that's what Miz, his greatest skill in this world is he is the king of WWE matches.
Yeah.
If you need someone to go out and do the most WWE match possible, you'd pick The Miz. Because it's the only thing he knows. Like, he grew up in the WWE mold. So that's all he knows how to do is WWE matches.
Maybe that's why this works so well, because all the flourishes and the cool bits are kind of Rey. But, like, for some reason, that complements Miz's style really well. There's a bit right at the start when Miz throws Rey out under the bottom rope, and Rey just did, like, this really cool tumble and landed on his feet. And I was like, that was awesome.
Yeah.
And later on with the alley-oop and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this I enjoyed this, and it was, what a bunch of false finishes.
Yeah, it really was.
Because we all thought Rey was going to win.
Yeah.
And you had... like, Miz cut off a 619 with a slam into the top turnbuckle, then did a skull-crushing finale. We thought it was over, but it wasn't. Near fall. Rey botched a roll-up by just slamming himself.
Yeah.
And then, but luckily, the air pushed Miz over.
It was very windy that day.
Then Rey goes for the 619, hits it, goes up for the frog splash, but Miz gets the knees up and rolls Rey up for the pin.
Yeah, I thought it was a really, really solid match.
Yeah.
A solid WWE match. And your note at the end there is hilarious in hindsight.
Yes. Because then we're like, okay, Miz is going through to the final. So he's either the best in the world or he's getting fired and going to Raw.
So we were like, well, maybe they put him because they need like a main event heel to go over onto the Raw side of things. Maybe that's why he's in the final. If we only knew what was coming
in our wildest dreams. But then we got
fever dreams.
Easily. Well, this was the best. This had the best match of the night in it.
Yes.
It just had about 80% of sleeper holds before it.
Yeah, eventually this got very good.
Yeah.
Eventually. And at the start of this, because this is Dolph Ziggler versus Seth Rollins, so I didn't mean to cut you off there. So Dolph Ziggler versus Seth Rollins. And at the start of this, I just thought to myself, I can't watch these two have another match.
Yeah.
It feels like they have had 800 matches this year. And I feel like I've watched all of them. And I was like, I don't think there's anything they can do that would interest me at this point. And it was quite like we'd had a lot of boring matches up until this point. The aside from the Rey Miz match, which was good, a lot of it I was really losing interest in this pay-per-view at this point. So I was like, God, now I've got to watch another Dolph Seth match. And as we said, the match itself wasn't great to begin with. And I really loved, but it really picked up and I was really getting into it by the end. Some really, really good stuff in this by the end. Well, great, like, series of near falls.
Yeah, it's like, was it not very good, or was it just exactly the same as the 2 hours of stuff we'd already had?
Yeah, there you go.
So it's like, oh, I'm just a bit sick of the heel works over the baby face. Baby face makes a little comeback. Back into the sleeper. Like, it's not exciting to me. Maybe for one or two matches, but not for 2 hours.
Well, that's it. Well, we've always said this about WWE, is that they don't have the variety like other wrestling promotions have. When they put together a show, you have different flavors and spices in there to keep things flavorful. Here, they just, it's every match feels the same. And especially in a one-night tournament where you're seeing the same people, that feels even more evident.
That's a good point, yeah. Because this was like the penultimate match of that series of people.
Yeah.
But Rollins might just be the Okada of WWE.
Yeah.
Because the last 5 minutes of this were excellent. Yeah. A great, great series of near falls. Like, just roll up trades. They did about 12. I lost count of flips into this, into that. It was excellent. And then, like, this great spot where Seth hits the ripcord knee. Remember that when he had the V trigger? The knee as a finisher. And he just falls onto Dolph in sort of exhaustion from this really weak pin. But Dolph kicks out. And at this point, we needed to watch Luke's news. So we'd muted the WWE commentary. That improved it a lot.
It really did.
Holy moly. But then, yes, Seth knocks down Drew outside. A great series of more moves. Then Seth does his superplex into a Falcon Arrow spot, which is reversed before the Falcon Arrow into a zigzag for a great near fall.
How do they keep getting stuff out of that Falcon Arrow superplex spot? Like, how?
Because he's amazing.
He's so good.
Seth is really good at riffing off his own moveset.
Yeah.
Sorry, you're going to have to take over the last bit. I just need to catch this snot.
As you can probably tell, Ollie has come down. That's why I've done all the videos today, because Ollie is very, very unwell. But yeah, like, and so Seth super kicks Dolph. And as soon as he hits Dolph, he dives out the ring onto Drew, which I thought was really, really great. But Drew sort of pushes him off. Dolph hits the super kick and wins. And again, we were like, huh, all right, Dolph won.
Yeah.
Cool. I guess Dolph's really in weird. The final. And we said to ourselves, they've set up a heel versus heel final. I can't even imagine what's going to happen there.
Where could they go with that? 45 minutes into this review, and we have only talked about World Cup matches, the US title match, and the tag match.
Yeah. So we've got three more matches to do. Covered the Shane Dolph match in the opening.
Oh, yeah, I forget that. Because I keep thinking, oh, we got Drew and Miz to come. Nope, we don't.
Dolph and Miz, you mean?
Yes, Drew and not Drew. Then we got AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe for the WWE title.
Ugh. Yeah, I mean, I said this in the review, but like, this is the fourth match they've had since SummerSlam. I mean, I've had my fill of this feud.
Uh-huh.
I'd have much preferred someone else.
It was definitely the weakest match of the four, because
it really was.
Several of those matches were actually really good.
Really great.
SummerSlam was good. Hell in a Cell was good.
Yep.
But here, it was, bar the opening spot where Joe goes for this huge dive. Like, you know, when he gets real speed on it and just pushes AJ. AJ's elbow goes straight into the announcer's desk.
Ouch.
Busted open immediately, like bleeding for the rest of the match. And a few stiff strikes there. Really, there's nothing else to mention apart from that phenomenal forearm for the win.
It was, a very, very boring nothing match. A bland match.
Mm.
And, like, you think about what this feud has all been about. Like, Joe playing these mind games on AJ, trying to infiltrate his house, the cops being called or whatever the hell happened.
Mm.
And, like, none of that factored into this match whatsoever.
Yeah.
And it just felt like these two, this was like two lads who have only met each other for the first time had a match. Like, that's almost felt like the story they told. There was none of that drama that this feud is needed. In which case, then, you may as well have put someone else there. Put Andrade there.
Yeah, like, just as like an exhibition.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
and he and AJ could have had a fun match. But as it was It wasn't the worst match on the show, because I think there were some of those first round World Cup matches that were worse, but it wasn't good.
Mm. Yeah, there's an argument that the main event was the worst on the show, I think.
Well, absolutely, yeah, we'll get to that. Unfortunately so.
Nothing felt pay-per-view caliber, really.
Yes, but then...
But, whoa!
If there was nothing to talk about the WWE Championship match, there was a heck of a lot to say about this Universal Championship match.
So we've done this out of order, remember? We've done the final of the World Cup first. So imagine, like, that hadn't happened yet.
Yeah.
This was a boring show. It was a boring show, and then we got Brock Lesnar versus Braun Strowman.
We had just got pizza.
Yeah.
Andy Datsun had run out of the studio to go and pick up the pizza that we'd ordered, and he came back. He said, I really don't want to miss Braun winning the Universal Championship, so I'm going to be as quickly as I can.
He's young.
He came back with these two pizzas. We sat down. We were all really excited. We opened up our pizzas, and we just stopped eating. Because after a while, you were like, I couldn't take my eyes off what was happening on screen. And I kept saying to myself, I mean, he's not winning, though, is he? But he's not winning. And then there was this little voice in the back of my head. I was like, but he is, though. Oh, but he is, though.
I called it.
You did.
I predicted Brock to win in
Brock
our prediction
long.
Show.
He always does.
Yeah. We can sort of do a recap, but Luke's going to have to do it. I'm leaking again.
So Baron Corbin came out first off with the Universal Championship, the vacant Universal Championship, and he was there to present the championship. And like Braun and Brock came down, they made their entrances and they did the big introductions and things like that. And then Baron holds up the Universal Championship above his head, kind of like shows it to both the guys. And then as he's leaving, turns around and he hits Braun in the back of the head with the championship. And that was the first moment that we suddenly, it was either you or Andy went, Brock's winning. And we were always like, no, surely not. And then he hit an F5.
But match starts.
Brock hits an F5, Braun kicks out. Brock picks him up, hits another F5, Braun kicks out. He hits another F5, Braun kicks out. I can literally do this match.
The third one was...
No, he hit the third one. The fourth one was
fourth,
the one.
Right.
And then he, so he hit a third one, Braun kicks out. He then does a fourth F5 to the outside, and because he can win the title on a count out because it's a vacant championship, which was quite a nice little moment.
I thought it was a great spot.
That was a great spot. Braun gets in before the 10 count. They get sort of into the corner. Braun gets one kick, and you're like, aha, here's where the comeback happens.
Super Braun.
But he runs into a fifth F5, and Brock wins. Brock Lesnar is your new Universal Champion. The man who we thought was gone after WrestleMania. The man we were for sure was gone after SummerSlam. The man we were very surprised to see come back at Hell in a Cell is your Universal Champion yet again.
Of course he is.
Of course he is.
Of course he is. This match went 3 minutes 20 seconds.
It felt longer. In all fairness, because there was a lot of like... after an
drama.
You could call it drama. Actually, no, I'll take that back. You can call it drama because it was. Because this was the match where I had my eyes glued to the screen for the most. It was nowhere near the awesomeness of Brock Goldberg at WrestleMania. It was nowhere near the awesomeness of Brock Goldberg at Survivor Series. It wasn't near the awesomeness of Brock Roman at WrestleMania a couple of years ago. Not this year's one, the other one. It was a bad match. But I couldn't take my eyes off it.
Well, I don't know, because...
It's interesting. I couldn't take my eyes off it. That's all I can say about it.
It's one of the many things on this show where you're just like, I kind of respect the balls on you, WWE, for just doing this insane thing.
And this is insane.
Yeah, so that opening of Baron hitting Braun with the Universal Championship and then Brock just looking at him and going, okay, F5, and then kick out. I thought that was incredible.
Yeah, awesome.
I thought that was awesome. Hits a second F5. I'm like, hey, he's kicked out again. Okay, now we can get into the proper match. When the third F5 was hit, I was like, okay, this isn't... like that's too many times now. You just jumped the shark. I still thought Strowman was winning. Mm-hmm. But I still think I'd feel that way regardless.
Yeah.
Then you get the count-out spot, which I thought was really smart because... the title can change hands on a count out for once.
Good work by the commentary team on pointing that out as well.
Yeah. And that's when we said this is so obviously a Paul Heyman match.
Yeah.
The story is Heyman books matches around big moves. And in more recent years, he's made that very refined to literally just finishes.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a finish only match. Everyone doesn't like if Brock Lesnar only has one button on his controller, and that is, well, he's got two. He's got that and German suplex.
Yeah. But then, Braun comes in, does the, even when he was fighting Brock off, I was like, but you've jumped the shark already, so I'm not into Braun winning, and I'm certainly not into Brock winning. And then Brock doesn't even, like, Braun doesn't even get anything. So Brock just, he squashed him.
It was a squash match.
And as funny as that is, from a well done you trolled us perspective, to WWE, I think it is hugely damaging.
Yeah, well, as we said in the review, the in-4-minute review, Braun has now lost to Brock Lesnar 3 times, lost to technically 4 times, actually. I didn't think about the SummerSlam one.
So yeah, in the four-way,
so
yeah.
He's lost to Brock Lesnar 4 times now. The SummerSlam match, the No Mercy match, Royal Rumble, and now here. And now he's also lost 5 Universal Championship matches. Obviously, those 4 we just named there, and the Hell in a Cell match against Roman. So now at 6 Universal Championship matches that Braun has now lost. Like, those aren't good numbers. And I think because Braun didn't get anything in this match, it really damages him. And what are we building to? Like a Braun Baron Corbin feud?
Well, yeah. Like, I mean, that's part of the reason this is so disappointing, because Brock Lesnar's going to be tied up with the champion versus champion match at Survivor Series with AJ Styles.
At least it's only 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And I do think that.
But that means that's 2 weeks of Braun versus Corbin yes. on TV, of Braun hilariously tipping over Corbin's car and all that nonsense we're going to get.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Can't wait for Raw now. But it's at least with AJ Brock, I do think AJ's going to get the win.
Let's see. AJ and Brock had a fantastic match at last year's Survivor Series.
One of the best WWE matches of the year.
Yeah, and I'm hugely excited about seeing the rematch a year later. Mm-hmm. I think that's something I didn't know I wanted to see so bad. But then, yeah, like, what's Lesnar doing after that? Is he just going to have Lesnar win now after the belt was off TV for so long? And that did harm the product. I definitely creatively, and you can certainly make the argument for actual ratings.
Yep.
To do that again for what seems like just the sake of a swerve is enormously damaging.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole Strowman thing, if this was their first match, I think this is a good way. It's almost like he's got that out because he was attacked at the start. Yeah. And then you can build to a bigger match. But that isn't the case. Braun's already had the singles match. He's already had other matches with Brock, and he's lost them all now. It's been over a year. No Mercy was in October last year when that Lesnar-Strowman match was. So this is not good. But I am certainly interested in where it goes next. But I don't know if that's from a genuine fascination or a morbid one.
I don't think I am. I think I was, by the time Roman won the belt at SummerSlam, I was so done with Brock Lesnar as Universal Champion and just not being around.
I think a lot of everyone was.
It just got too far. Roman should have won the belt at WrestleMania. Yeah. I know hindsight is a wonderful thing. And yes, it was a wonderful, we got you, we all swerved your moment. Grand, you fooled us all. That was such a damaging choice because it drove so little interest for the rest of the months leading up to SummerSlam.
It stalled the main event.
It totally stalled Raw. And yet here we are again. Lesnar is the champion. And it's short-sighted vision. I think this is a short-sighted choice. It almost felt like Vince did this because it was the result that no one expected. But that's such a short-sighted way of looking at it. Because now
it's hotshot booking.
It's hotshot booking. Yeah. That's what killed WCW, was hotshot booking. It's like Brian Alvarez was advertising the death of WCW, which we've actually got up there, throughout Twitter. Like, every time W made a really weird choice, it was like, death of WCW is available now to see how these sorts of decisions killed a company. I mean, WWE's not going to die, obviously, but I think this is a damaging, short-sighted philosophy. Because where do you go from here?
And where does Lesnar go from here? Does he go to UFC?
Yeah.
Or is he staying in WWE?
But I don't care now.
So then Michael Cole rather hilariously says, off the back of the AJ Brock Survivor Series announcement, Survivor Series is the only night when Raw and SmackDown superstars go head-to-head in direct competition. And then he introduced the final of the World Cup tournament, which had a Raw and SmackDown star. Go head-to-head.
In direct competition.
In direct competition.
That is WWE commentary and doublespeak in a nutshell.
Like, it's right in your face.
It's right there. Like, it's they have these corporate demanded things you have to say because that they branded it something. Mm. And they're like, well, our marketing team worked really hard on this branding, so we've got to get this branding across, even if that branding doesn't actually make sense in the context of something else. But you're like, well, that's what the marketing team have got to come up with, so we've got to say it. And you're like, it doesn't make any sense.
It runs really well with 18 to 35 male demographic. Oh, that's great, but it doesn't run well with my credibility as an announcer.
Yeah, well, he lost that years ago.
Well, we already talked about that final. That is the one, if you missed it. Shane McMahon won.
And so here is a night. Hulk Hogan made his return. We had a series of boring World Cup matches. Then we got Brock Lesnar winning the Universal Championship, followed up by Shane McMahon, who wasn't in the tournament, winning the tournament. And at this point, you're like, this is mad. This show, like, you're not well. And I could almost believe you imagined all of this.
Well, we got a...
like, if you'd have said, I've just had this really weird dream where Brock Lesnar won the Universal Championship and Shane McMahon, I'd be like, yeah you're ill, man.
Shout out to the mayor of Painesville, Dan, who got in touch with Andy after the Shane McMahon win and said, I'm watching this. Is this only on the German feed that Shane McMahon just won? No, that's a global thing.
No, everyone's seeing this. Everyone's seeing this global pay-per-view event known as Crown Jewel.
So, yeah, like, with all of that, which I have to say, when Shane McMahon won and after the Brock win, after what was a really boring pay-per-view.
Very boring.
We were having a whale of a time.
I was roaring with laughter. But
we were having fun.
I was having fun by this point.
Hey, they just want to have fun. That's what Michael Cole would say. And then, out of nowhere, like, oh yeah, and Shawn Michaels is making his in-ring return for the first time in 8.5 years. And I don't care.
Yeah, it's such a shame that really felt overshadowed. Mm. Like, this is the first time we've seen Shawn Michaels wrestle in 8.5 years. Shawn Michaels, one of the best of all time. A man who...
And that's not hyperbole.
That's not hyperbole. He genuinely is. And he's stuck to his retirement. He's one of the few guys in this industry who are stuck to his retirement. He is done. He's not getting back in the ring. He has had money offers thrown at him time after time. He's always said no. This was the first time he said yes. And it's the one thing I didn't want to talk about at the end of this show. I want to talk about anything else, but like all the other mad stuff that happened on this show.
Yeah.
And that's a real shame. That's such a shame. And then it doesn't help that this match suffered greatly by... Okay, so we think Triple H looked like he injured himself. You noticed it first because we got a message from one of our website writers who said, I think Triple H has broken his hand because he was gone for a long time. Mm. Like, Taker and Kane worked over Shawn for a long...
Too long.
Long time. And... I was like, this is really boring. This is a very boring match. And I didn't even consider, like, well, Triple H has been gone for a long time. And obviously he shows up and he's not moving right. Like, he does these moves. Like, he charges Kane into the corner, but like he just moves his shoulders. Like, he shoulder tackles him in the corner more or less, but like almost chest bumps. And that was when our website editor said, I think he's broken his hand. But you said, God, his chest looks weird.
It was his left pec, or maybe his right pec. It was a pec. And it just...
Apex predator.
Yeah. At some positions of his body, it just looks like one of his pecs had fallen to the bottom of the skin.
Yeah, like
Cena's
did. If
that makes sense. Yeah. And, that's a torn... That's torn pectoral. So, but that was just me observation and the fact that he certainly seemed like he was wrestling with a real injury.
Because when he hit the pedigree on Undertaker, he couldn't lock it fully in. Like, he barely got the arms up. He barely went to his knees, like, to try and absorb some of the shock, I guess.
Yeah.
But the match really suffered from it. So we think where this injury happened was actually through some botches in of itself. Mm. The match fell apart when they all got out of the ring and they started to do some stuff around the table. Triple H bellowing spots of what to do next.
So Taker clears the Saudi Arabian commentary table. And he gets up on it with Shawn. He's motioning to put Shawn through the table, but Hunter saves him at the last minute.
With a tombstone, no less, which would hurt Taker just as much as it would Shawn.
But Hunter saves Shawn at the last minute, and Kane's down, like, one side of the ring. Shawn's in front of them. And Taker goes to Irish whip Hunter one way, and Triple H says, really audibly, the other way. which, you know, always takes me out of the action. Not that I was into it anyway, because I thought the match was sloppy but to this point, regardless. And then they do this, like, both men whipped each other, and they ran side by side.
I think Undertaker thought Triple H was reversing, but Triple H had no intention of doing that. So they both Irish whipped themselves into the barricade.
It was a glitch.
And it was a glitch, because then Triple H just stopped selling it. And he instantly, such a professional, was like, I need to save this. Stood up, went towards Kane so they can do a spot, and Kane chokeslammed Triple H through a table, but it wasn't the table that Taker had cleared. It was the one with all the monitors still on it. And that is where I think the injury happened.
Because he was moving fine before then.
And that is when Triple H just disappeared from the match, more or less.
And there's a bit, so, you know, Kane, Taker and Sean do a little bit of wrestling. I think Taker did this, you know, his leg drop on the apron on Sean, which is always makes me wince now, given his hip replacement. Yeah. But then Taker weirdly goes over to Triple H in a kind of semi-press-up position. And you can't hear what he's saying because of the hair. But Michael Cole is putting this over, like, all the icy stare of The Undertaker. I'm like, Undertaker's not Randy Orton.
No.
He doesn't get down on, like, prone on the ground and stare at someone in the eyes.
He was just going, is your soul okay?
Which was, like, so weird, because Taker never does. Like, he sticks to his character.
Yeah.
It's tough. You can't really criticize them too much, because...
Yeah, no, that's it.
And it's remarkable that Triple H wrestled the rest of the match. If he did tear a pec, I can't imagine how painful that is.
And then on top of that, Kane's mask fell off. I don't think that's ever happened in a Kane match. His mask just, because his hair's
and
attached
hair,
to it as well.
Yeah.
It all just fell off. And then Shawn did his moonsault to the outside, which did look impressive, because it's Shawn Michaels doing a moonsault off the top rope to the outside. But you couldn't stop looking at Kane without his mask on, and Shawn Michaels, his face just hitting so hard in the floor. And I just thought to myself, I want this match to end. I really don't want to watch this match anymore, because it just felt sad.
I think the ages were 53, 53, 51, and 49. And, you know, those guys, you give those guys a half-hour main event.
Well, someone pointed out on Twitter that they were recently watching Survivor Series 1995.
Oh, wow.
And all four of these guys were on the card. Three of them in the same match. And you're like, that's 1995. And here we are.
23 years ago.
We're in 2018, and these lads are the main event of this show. And then you got Triple H tearing his pectoral. You've got Shawn Michaels face planting the floor. You've got Kane's mask falling off. You've got Undertaker whipping himself, glitching and whipping himself into the barrier. It just looked really sad. And then when, like, Michaels finally gets the hot tag to Triple H, he's so slow getting in the ring, as you would be, because he's and as I said in the review, credit to him, it's like the tag team match he had with Triple H, with Austin against Benoit and Jericho, which I still to this day say is probably the greatest Raw main event of all time.
If not
the top, it's definitely in the top five. It's like, it's such a great match. And that was the match where Triple H tore his quad. But he still continues working that match. And you've got to wonder if that added more time onto his injury, of his recovery. But he is a true professional. He is someone, it's not like when Sin Cara dislocated his little finger and called off the match.
Yeah.
This is a man who has torn his pectoral muscle. I can't even imagine how painful that is. I'm someone who's never broken a bone in my body or had any serious injuries. So I don't know what any of this is like. I don't even have pectoral muscles. But I just cannot imagine the pain he was in to do this. So credit to him. But all the wind was knocked out of this match's sails.
Yeah. And it had a few cool stare downs, and the crowd was certainly into it, but it's past its sell-by date, we keep saying on these reviews. That I couldn't work out whose fault not catching Shawn properly was off of that moonsault off the top rope to the outside.
Yeah.
That I'm uncomfortable with Charlotte Flair doing that.
Yeah.
This is Shawn Michaels. And
Charlotte always looks to land on her feet as well.
Yeah.
Like, when she does that moonsault, she lands on her feet and falls backwards. Whereas Shawn was just like, nope, I am falling. My face is going to hit the floor.
Yeah, and his face does hit the floor. Hard. And he gets up, and it is, you can see like this purple mark around his eye socket.
He spent
already.
he spent all the time he was just on the floor holding his face, just being, and I wonder if in his head he was like, God, it wasn't worth it.
He looked dazed right until the end of the pay-per-view when Triple H and Shawn Michaels were celebrating. They won. Not like it. I mean, I don't really care.
I predicted it.
Yeah, well done.
only to be Denny different.
And, Shawn looked like he was somewhere else, so hopefully he didn't suffer a concussion. But really, it was Kane who should have been hiding his face. Triple H gets the hot tag. Just a series of very bad-looking moves. What a kick to Taker's stomach looked just awful. But like you said, it's the pec injury. And then they, like, who knows? 7:40, well, for our time, it was 43 minutes past the hour. That's not a usual time for a WWE pay-per-view to go off air, especially these days. So it could have been cut by at least 15 minutes.
Maybe this match was meant to go an hour.
Yeah. Well, with entrances, it would have gone about 40 minutes.
Yeah, which sounds about right for Triple H, really. That's usually like his wheelhouse for pay-per-view events.
Yeah, and their last match went half an hour, and there's four of them. Yeah. What could go wrong? That's more guys to work more time, right?
Turns out, everything. everything could go wrong.
But the finish was cool. Taker gets Triple H in Hell's Gate, which seemed to just be a cover of him saying, "Help, is it hurt?
Yeah.
Are you okay?
You're all right."
And Shawn breaks it up by super kicking Kane onto Taker to break up that submission. Everyone down, quadruple down, and then Brothers of Destruction sit up. That was a great spot.
It was a cool visual, and Triple H and Shawn Michaels sold it really well, sort of like cowering into each other, being like, "Oh man, we've got ourselves into a situation now, haven't we?"
Yeah.
But then he just did a weak pedigree on Kane after a Shawn Michaels superkick for the win.
That's it.
That was it.
And pyro.
That, unfortunately, that's Shawn Michaels' return. That's what he came out of retirement for. And that's just a bit sad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, dollar. But you did do that for the money.
He's probably got a nice house out of it.
Creatively, I don't think it was worth it.
No,
but
neither do I.
I doubt I would have turned down an enormous amount of money to do something like that too. So
that's why I'm working here.
It's a shame, but an understandable shame.
Mm.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.